is my shepherd. I'll follow him always. Ding, ding, ding. The more he sang, the more darker saw God. He got angry, and there was a spear in his hand. Don't know which passage or which song he sang. And maybe this is all speculation. Maybe he reached a part, you know. Though he walked through the shadow of the valley of death, you have the spear coming across to him. Suddenly he has this spear coming at him. What will you be doing while you're singing halfway a spear is coming along? And David escaped. David escaped his presence twice in verse 11. It could have happened a few times. What would you have done? Now, let's think about the emotional development of David. David was a young kid in the wilderness, or in the pasture. If he had an enemy, the enemies were lions and bears. Easier to deal with, right? Pull the lion by the beard, kill him. You know, kick the bears in a bum and chase him away. Right? But this is the king. This is the king who is now love him and hate him at the same time. Think about how David feel. Now, tell me, how do you relate to someone who love you and hate you at the same time? It's tough, isn't it? It's tough. How do you love someone who also love you but also hates you? And how do you know when they're hating and when they're loving? And that's why when they tell you know, in training dogs, of course it must apply to children too, that do not use your hand. You know, anybody, you know, gone to dog training before, training your little dog? No. My dog is, well, not that big. And so when he was being trained, right, we were sending him to training school, one of the things they say, do not use your hand when he's naughty. Because when you use your hand, the next time you raise your hand, the dog doesn't know whether you're about to pat him or beat him. So you got to beat him with a roll of newspaper or something else, and you use your hand for patting him. So every time you raise your hand, the dog says, otherwise, the next time you raise your hand, you go, he doesn't know how to respond because he doesn't know whether to flee or to befriend. So, there is David. How does he relate to this king? Now, thank God he had a good friend, Jonathan. I believe that David was suffering on his inside. His emotions are now feeling hurt. I mean, when some of us were growing up, I mean, you would never dream that one day in your life, you will have such a thing as an enemy. Right? When you're born as little children, would you be expecting enemies? No. And then you become an adult, and you become a Christian, then you realize, hey, there is such a thing as an enemy. I'm not talking about just the devil. Human beings who choose to be your enemies for different reasons. Right? They could call themselves by nice names, like critics or whatever. But basically, they're your enemies. They are looking for your downfall, looking for weaknesses in your armor, looking for an excuse to shoot you down. Those are enemies, not friends. Only friends look for reasons to love you and care for you. Enemies look for reason to shoot you down. You never imagine. And that is an emotional maturity that one has to grow up with. And so David is learning. He's learning to handle these things. Not sure how well he was handling. In the midst of all these things, there comes love. Really sounds like a movie, isn't it? You have a love-hate relationship. You have a nice, you know, soulmate. And in the midst of all this turmoil, twice probably, almost speared to death, you got this love story happening at the same time. in verse 20, chapter 18, Saul's daughter fell in love with David. So you have a love story beginning here. And Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David, and it told Saul, and the thing pleased him. So the king thinks, okay, this is an excuse. Now Saul is now his enemy. Everything he said about David was always something negative. It's strange. David was serving him, helping him establish his kingdom, and here he was going after David. Verse 21. I will give her to him, that she may be a snare to him, that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. And so, and David was a respectful person. When they pass word down to him and says, you know, look, the king is delighted in you. His servants love you, in verse 22. Become his son-in-law. And verse 23, now look at what David said about himself. Verse 23, David says, does it seem to you a light thing to be a king's son-in-law? Seeing I'm a poor and lightly esteemed man. Look, I don't know what your translation says. Look very carefully. Can we bring it up here for them? Yeah. Verse 23. It says, I am a poor, lightly esteemed man. What do you think of his self-image? It's been knocked left, right, and center now. Where was a David who was, hallelujah, you know, God who helped me, you know, kill the lion and the bear will help me against Goliath. And look at this David. He's not having feelings of insecurity. He was not secure about his relationship with King Saul. Now remember, David respected the king very much. He was from a shepherd's point of view. Saul by that time had built palaces and had all these luxuries around him. And when he came, he says, no, I'm just a nobody. But Saul's servant keeps saying to David, you know, and came back to the king and said, this is what David says. Now the king says in verse 25, the king does not desire any dowry. The king doesn't want any money. He just wants 100 foreskins of the Philistines. Terrible wedding gift, right? 100 people have to die for him to get married. And the reason he asked for that is this. He hoped that David would be accidentally killed in trying to get the 100 Philistines. Isn't that very wicked of him? Right. He was hoping that in this strange dowry request, that David has to go to the Philistine camp and kill 100 Philistines and chop all them up, carry in a bag of foreskins, bring it before the king. Here, king, terrible dowry. And hoping that David will be killed in the process. And you know what David did? He went out, killed 200. Bring it in a bag to the king. Here, O king. What did the king do? He was not happy. He was not a happy man. He had to keep his word. Michal was in love with David. So a royal wedding was called on. If they had cameras in those days, you know, it would have been like a royal wedding publicized in every mass media they could. The cries were going about, you know, sending invitations. And the cries in the streets were going, it was a royal wedding. And do not know how the ceremony was, but the father of the bride was not a happy father. Told you it would be a good movie. So, father of the bride was most unhappy, but David got married to Michal. If you stop the story there, you could have almost ended the story and they live happily ever after. Wouldn't that be a nice place to stop, right? And end the movie, right? After all the intrigues, you end the movie there and with a big, great wedding and they live happily ever after. Nope. Story continues. Saul keep growing in hatred against David. Until one fine day, David knew that he will not be able to continue in that circumstances. So when they were looking for David, Saul, his good Saul began persecuting him in chapter 19. And Jonathan says to him in 1 Samuel 19 verse 2, "My father seeks to kill you. Therefore, please be on your guard until morning. Stay in a secret place and hide." So Jonathan, who's a good friend of David, told David that the father is now plotting to kill him. And David actually had to sneak out. And chapter 19 is another place like the movies. But we are not talking about movies here. Talking about the Bible. See, if a lot of Christians read the Bible, they find it very interesting, more interesting than the movies. Look at verse chapter 19. It says in verse 11, "Saul also sent messengers to David's house to watch him and to kill him in the morning." So the house was surrounded. So can you imagine? There was David's house, nice looking big palace or mansion. And around it was all these stormtroopers, the dark weather sand, and all these people around waiting to kill David. And David was in a house, and Michal, David's wife, told him, "If you do not save your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed." And so in the darkness, something came out from the window, slowly coming down. Lo and behold, it was some bed sheet or some string. And then you have David rappelling down the side of the window. Music, please. And then he came down. And he slid down in verse 10. And then he escaped that night in verse 12. And then Michal, she makes something and put it on the bed so that it looks like David was still asleep. So when the guards were looking for him and they're knocking on the door, Michal opened. By the time David has leaked out the window, and she opened it, "Where's David? Where's David? We are all after him." And you know how they are. They approach him, look all up down, and say, "Oh, he's sick on the bed." They look over, oh yeah, his shape is still there. The shape of someone that looks like David. And in the end, when they went to check the bed in verse 16, there was an image in bed with a cover of goat's hair for his head. So David had escaped. And then for the rest of his life, he was living in caves, running from one place to another. He was now a fugitive. He is separated from his wife, a fugitive running away, trying to get food on the table, trying just to survive, didn't even think about becoming a king anymore. All he wanted is just to get by, to live for another day. He ran and ran for a long time. And if David was about 30 years when he was crowned king, and if he was approximately about, let's say, 17 when he slayed Goliath, give it a couple of nice, pleasant years, and let's give and take 3, and if after some time things began to get worse for him, maybe in the second year or third year, David, and then David ran away in the whatever time span that was, after 2 or 3 years living in the palace, that would mean that David was living in caves in the wilderness for 10 long years. 10 would be a nice figure to think about. For 10 years, he was a broken man. Think about what that does to a person's soul.